There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along. And big thank you. A lot of more commentary coming in from our conversation from last hour. Hey, listen, Paul was on. You can go back and check out the podcast. If you missed my conversation with Paul Feinbaum, grab the podcast. Should be posting in the next few minutes here. You can get it through the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app, among other platforms. But let me push the app right now. And thank you, Sheila, on the text line, saying the app is awesome. Y'all, it's real easy. If you're on your Apple user, go to iTunes. Android user, go to Google Play. It's and just make sure you don't put a point between the 6 and the 5. So just FM Talk 1065, right? FM Talk 1065. Just search for that. It can be separated out. It can be mashed together. Just no decimal point between the 6 and 5. That's our app. You'll see our logo. Download it and check it out. And use it for all kind of stuff. All right? So check that. And thank you, Sheila. Appreciate that. And you'll have probably more discussion about the Supreme Court's ruling today, and maybe what happens with name, image, and license or likeness going forward. Sports night tonight with Dalton and Corey. That starts at 6 o'clock here at FM Talk 106.5. All right, mentioned going in the break. Hey, coming back on the show. So obviously our conversation was good last time. Sean Strickler, VP of Public Affairs for the Alabama Rural Electrification Association. So I didn't run you off last time. Thanks for coming back, Sean.
My pleasure. I'm glad to be back. I'm just glad your audience likes people with their names spelled correctly and talk about nerdy issues like broadband.
This is perfect. You and I are like, listen, we'll entertain each other. Hopefully we bring some other people along for the ride. All right, people hear the discussion of rural broadband. This has been going on a couple years. And then, you know, we had the question after the CARES Act, right, during the tenure of then-President Trump, and the discussion, could you use, how much of this federal money could you use for broadband and dealing with students that were having to remote? And then we go to another bill coming out of Washington, an even bigger bill, signed off on by President Biden, more money coming to the states. We're talking about billions here, over $4 billion coming to the state of Alabama, and it gets me back to this question about rural broadband and where we're going. So kind of bring us up to date, the state of affairs right now on rural broadband in Alabama.
You know, it's not a lot different than last time we talked, but the big difference is what you brought up, the Recovery Act that was sent. And it's such a big deal and so important to the people in Washington, D.C. talking about broadband that they took $192 million of that and said it can only be used for broadband and water and wastewater. There's $192 million we know we have to use towards broadband.
Is that okay? And that, even though the money comes through the state, it does have an earmark on it coming out of the federal government.
Yeah, I mean the earmark is figure out how to spend this on broadband, water, or wastewater. So it still leaves all of the deciding where it's going to go to the state. I mean they still have every decision. The feds just said, look, we're going to help make up your mind on part of this, and we're going to divide up a couple of billion dollars. I think it was like $20 billion amongst the state. Our total came to $192 million in Alabama, and they said, you need to use this on new technologies or replacing old water and wastewater treatment plants.
And I see specifically just recently in headlines, $1.3 million allocated to expand broadband services in Alabama from the governor, and what there's been maybe $20 million awarded already this year on this? Is that different than the $192 million?
Completely different. That is what the state, Senator Clay Schofield out of North Alabama and Randall Shedd out of Cullman, Alabama, passed a few years back. that's the state grant program, and that's a small program. We did about $20 million worth of it, and that's all that the state put out there.
So with the – kind of give me an idea, Sean. $192 million. Like, I can tell you how many acres of land that would buy. I could maybe tell you how many cows that would buy. I have no idea. How much rural broadband does that buy?
You know, the figures, depending on who you talk to, the figures out there say that it's going to cost anywhere between $1 billion and $4 billion to put fiber everywhere, so every person in the state of Alabama has access to a fiber network. That's just not rural. We've got a lot of technology gaps in, you know, urban and suburban areas, and a lot of that stuff should be able to stand on its own. You know, broadband should be a money-making endeavor in most places. The places where we need grants are those places that just aren't sustainable. It's the reason why FDR did the Rural Electrification Act. It's the reason why I'm employed by the electric co-ops to talk about issues like this, is because we went in places where it didn't make sense for investor-owned utilities like Alabama Power Company, and the key in their name and the terminology we use is investor-owned. They're responsible to their shareholders. They've got to get a return on investment. And there are places in Alabama, like where my co-ops serve, that have less than 6 consumers per mile of service area. It doesn't make any for-profit financial sense to invest a bunch of money in infrastructure in places like that, because you'll rarely get a return. That's the reason why you've got to come up with grant programs if you want that same quality of life to the very important rural areas in Alabama, you know, because when we were talking about rural Alabama through the legislative process, I looked at a lot of legislators and said, look, you can either invest in rural Alabama or you can subsidize it, because you're going to do one or the other. And I would much rather see investments in things like broadband, so we have more people, economic development there, so that it can stand on its own.
Yeah, and that term you use, to subsidize, is an important question here. So in looking at this spending, would you incentivize or subsidize? Would you take a private company and say, hey, we know that investor-owned company, like you said, that's not profitable for them to put that in where there's only six users. But would this money pay for the infrastructure, and we could talk about that, fiber or whatever it is, the hard cost, and then let them administer it? Or would it be that they're going to go on it, we're going to have another group like it is with rural electrification that owns all that? You know, like who owns it and who uses it?
That's the beauty of a lot of these grant programs, that it needs to be privately held. My co-ops are privately owned. They're owned by their members, like any other cooperative system set up, just like your credit union, where they're member-owned and the dividends go back to those members. But you need to have, one, you need to have skin in the game, and two, the program for subsidization or incentive, whichever you want to call it, needs to be good enough to where you can go in the black. You know, there needs to be enough of incentive. We talked about the ADECA program. The most money that the governor can issue through ADECA is 30% of a project cost, or $1.2 million in a project, whichever is higher. So you're ensuring that company has skin in the game.
Which is good. We also talked about, you know, having that skin in the game for linking. I think last time we almost got in a conversation of arteries and capillaries and, you know, how this would be distributed, right, throughout the, I mean, you've got this rural region can work together, and here they have this network. But that does have to, in this case, different than maybe power, has to plug back into the main network. I don't know what we call that, but the main route for this digital connectivity.
It does. What you're going to have, the one thing is, and Mobile is a perfect example, it's a place is called Points of Presence, a POP. If you're a nerd, like I've been forced to become, and it's actually interesting, and it's not that complicated if I can figure it out. That means everyone in your listening audience should be able to figure it out if I did. A POP is a point of presence, and that's where you go out to Dallas, Chicago, or Atlanta, and that's where the internet, quote-unquote, lives.
Okay.
Huge rooms of servers and everything. So that's what they call the first mile, is going to one of these big server rooms and bringing it to a POP, a point of presence. There's one in Mobile. There's a couple. There's one in Montgomery, a couple in Birmingham, in Huntsville. And then you have the middle mile, which is what we were talking about, the artery system, which we need to do a better job of in the state of Alabama, putting together a middle mile network, because that's what gets that internet to the individual internet service providers. So the Freedom Fiber, which is Tom Bigbee Electric Co-op subsidiary that they have up in Marion County, Alabama. They've been in the news lately with some things that they're doing, but they need good, reliable, direct internet access, and that would be off of that middle mile network.
Right. So that, so as we picture this, like, it's Shawntown, right? Shawntown, Alabama. We're a rural area. We've networked this all out. We have to get from, what's our reason, right? Because we don't want to carry the freight. And correct me if I'm wrong. I wouldn't want to carry the freight for the whole middle, the middle connection back to the main artery. I'd want somebody else to chip in on that, right? The to Susantown and Billytown to be part of this.
Oh, absolutely. That's the only way you would survive. Think of it. You can think of it just like the way my co-ops are set up, my electric cooperatives are set up, because we've got what's called a generation and transmission cooperative, PowerSouth. It's owned by a bunch of my distribution co-ops, those guys, which would equate to the internet service providers. So they all collectively came together because none of my members could afford to own a big generating plant, but collectively they can. So the same premise is true with when it comes to internet. You know, those arteries, those big, it doesn't make any sense for any one person to own it or be served by just their own. They need to collectively come together. And the other problem that, especially in rural areas, that we run into on the middle mile side is we're held hostage a little bit. The big companies out there, you're at their, you know, if they need the bandwidth for their consumers, you know, what's going to happen to the people that, you know, are contracting on their system? They might be thought of a little bit less favorably.
And again, how do we get, let's say that in these communities, rural communities, they got a robust system to deliver, and they're in, you know, in Mobile or Montgomery or Huntsville, they have a robust system. But that middle connection, you could have the best, correct me if I'm wrong, but in this small town you and I are in, we could have the best system laid out there. But if that middle mile is not ready to go, we essentially don't have anything.
We see it all the time with my electric cooperatives. I already have seven of them in the business right now that are slowly getting fiber internet out to the end consumer. And every one of them multiple times have lost connectivity through no fault of their own. But the people that they're getting it from, where it's coming into the big server room in their office, that connection goes down. And you're just out of luck at that point. That's why the more robust fiber network we have, the better off we are. And we haven't even talked about the bandwidth eaters, the different programs out there that are going to just eat. You know, you were talking about your app.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how much bandwidth does that use? How much of the system, the limited fiber that we have right now, how much are you using? Because you're getting all of your, instead of the radio waves, everyone's listening to it through the internet.
Yeah, and that's you know what, today is the least amount of use. Every day we go forward, that's going to be more. I mean, that's like every day, and maybe
that's
even.
That's a great point. Today we're less than tomorrow will be.
If just joining us, talking to Vice President of Public Affairs at the Alabama Rural Electric Association. Sean Strickler, our guest, I got a couple questions here. I want to get a couple before we go to the break, and we'll come back. But this one says, can you ask Sean Strickler, who actually will own the infrastructure when this happens? Will it belong to the state, or will taxpayer dollars be used to construct infrastructure that is then privately owned?
I would assume, because nothing has been set in stone, but with the current programs out there right now, they are going to be qualifying grant programs to where it helps subsidize programs that don't make sense for consumer or any investment out there from private companies. It's just not going to return. So it will be owned by a private company. I would never, ever advocate for anything to get 100% grant. You should never give someone all the money. because then they don't have any skin in the game and they won't take care of it. And I would also argue that we don't want the state owning a fiber network. The right. DOT does all that they can, and they do as good a job as they can, but I don't want the Department of Transportation in charge of whether or not I get internet.
Well said. We're coming right back. More with Sean Strickler. And more questions. Rural broadband in the state of Alabama, and are we at one of those sea change moments here? We'll find out when we get back.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
All right, welcome back. And continuing our conversation with Sean Strickler with the Alabama Rural Electrification Association, talking broadband as he's done with us before. And people are asking some tech questions here too, but let me kind of put them in language I can understand. What's going to be carrying this internet, Sean, when we go to rural areas? Is this going to be satellites? Is this going to be fiber? Do you know?
Right now, with all of my co-ops that are involved in this, they're involved in fiber to the home, all the way to the home. And the reason why I think it's important, our preference and what we would like to see is we would like to see the most incentives, even though fiber is the most expensive way to get broadband to the home, it's also future-proof. I'm not a tech person, but I'm smart enough to look at everything and know that they can divide a hair, piece of glass the size of a hair, into hundreds of different light waves, and that's your broadband. And there's, since they started using fiber, they could divide it like 16 times when they first started, and now it's hundreds of times. It's incredible, the technology that is in the back room that can make this fiber more and more usable, which is great because the bigger the bandwidth, you don't lose it with fiber. If you've got coax or satellite, you're very, very much limited. You know, you're talking about new generations of hardware you've got to deal with, not software in the back room.
Here's so many more questions from the text line, but this one, maybe you can't speak specifically, but Matt says, fiber optic cable is 200 yards away from the entrance to our community in Bon Secours, so in Baldwin County there. Why won't an internet provider connect our neighborhood to this fiber network? Could it deal with that kind of question as well?
Hear it all the time. A lot of times that it comes down to dollars and cents. Whoever that company is that owns that fiber, one, it could be proprietary fiber. It could be, you know, some company somewhere, internal use only. It's not going out to the internet. It's not going out to the World Wide Web. So you're never going to get on that because that's someone using it for intranet, not internet.
Okay.
But the other thing is, if it's an internet service provider out there, what they've done is they've looked at the numbers. They've crunched the numbers and said, you know, I'm sorry, but it just doesn't make sense for us to invest anything to put your neighborhood on. And that's one of the reasons why we have to have grant programs so that people don't have the opportunity. They can't look at just the dollars and cents. If they go past somewhere, if they get a grant, they've got to serve it. And that's the important part about these grants as well.
So it may be able to be linking, I wonder, like a triage list and say, okay, here's some places we're really close, right? We can tackle this for this much money versus another project over here that may be, you know, some kind of major project.
Without question, if you look at, this isn't really why this grant program was created. It was created for, you know, the most rural of areas that are unserved. But if you go and look at some of the grants that have been given to a cable company here in the state, and I'm not going to mention any names, but they got a grant to serve a subdivision outside of Alabaster. Well, that's not really rural, but it's not in an incorporated area. So it meets the legal definition of it, but they got $85,000 or something like that in a grant, which made the dollars and cents work to take that fiber that was running right by the entrance and hook up that neighborhood.
Hey, Sean, is there? I've got people just coming in with questions right and left. Can I hold you over the news break? Can you hold on for one more segment with us?
Absolutely.
All right, let's do that because there's no way to get these asked here before we go to the news. So we'll go to the news and come back. More with Sean Strickler. We're talking about rural broadband and kind of how this works going forward. And yeah, I got to wonder if we're not at that time, right? Money coming to the state of Alabama, programs already in the place inside the state of Alabama that is been putting up some money to help work with groups out here to get this going. And y'all are texting in with your specific areas of Southwest Alabama. Listen, we'll ask some of these questions when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile, the segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. So my buddy Trey's been doing it 13 years in Mobile and Baldwin counties, and the formula pretty simple. You've got junk. It could be at your house, could be a storage unit that you're paying on every month and you don't know what's in there. Could be a junk out in the backyard. Could be that gigantic trampoline. And all the kids have moved on. It's still there, the playhouse, the swing set. Even if you want to get the storage shed in the backyard, big things like that, or things that are in your attic, things you physically can't move. It's junk. You want it gone. You need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. Very easy to make that appointment as well. Online, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com, or pick up the phone and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And they will set an appointment time on a day. They'll find a day that works for you. And a window of time that works for you. None of that, like, they'll be there sometime between Monday at 8 and Friday at 5 p.m. No, they'll make an actual appointment time. They'll show up. They quote you a price on the job. You say yes. They get to work and get it done right then. We've used them here at the station. We've used them at our house. It's 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right. And thankful that he held over with us, because y'all are piling the questions in, and that's good. Sean Strickler, VP of Public Affairs with the Alabama Rural Electrification Association. And talk about rural broadband. Sean, there's a lot here. You and I talked during the break and kind of answering some of these questions. I mean, Matt had asked this question, you know, it's 200 yards from the entrance to our community. Why won't the internet provider connect our neighborhood to the fiber network? You pointed out you got to figure out who owns that network first, correct?
Correct.
And it might be something that's not even available for the public.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of proprietary fiber that's out there that, whether it could be government-owned, if it's, you know, and some of the things, you know, all of the strands of fiber could be spoken for. AT&T, say AT&T owns it. You know, they could have a private contract with Austell to have all of that to go from one place to another. Well, once it's gone, it's gone. You know, they can't hook you in. But more than likely, it has to do with cost. It has to do with feasibility. Does it make financial sense for us to tap in and serve these people?
But that's kind of the question we're talking about, whether it be somewhere in that, I'm using some term I'm not even qualified to use, but like a suburban rural interface, or it's something that's very, very rural. That's the question of making it feasible, right?
It is a question, and it's your structure of how you want your business model to be. Rural electric cooperatives are a not-for-profit cooperative to where we can't lose money. You know, it's not a charity, but it doesn't make a profit. It's got to pay its employees and make enough money to be sustainable for the future. And that's the business model that we use, even with broadband, for my co-ops that are involved in it. When you look at an investor-owned internet service provider, what they're looking at is a 3 to 5 year payoff and payback. Our co-ops are looking at 7 to 10 years to make a project work. So, you know, there's a different mindset and mentality. We look at we're making money if we're covering our bills, kind of like most people that are probably listening to this show. You know, if you can throw a little bit of money back into savings, that's been a profitable month.
So, okay, this is a question here. Will our cost be more to get on the internet than it would be in a city? This is somebody coming in from Washington County.
I wish. I unfortunately at this point do not live in a place that has fiber service. Affordability is probably as important as connectability, because if you put fiber out there and for 100, you know, 100 megs up, 100 megs down, you charge $199, well, that's not affordable for anyone.
Right.
I can tell you that most of my co-ops, their minimum package is, I've got a couple of them that change a little bit, but the average is right around $69 a month for 100 up, 100 down.
Okay, so that's, and so people can compare that to, and that's, you know, I mean, that's be like in the city. Yeah, that's, I mean, that's kind of money people are spending right now, at least, for internet.
Well, that's, you know, that's on the cheap side in that two-year introductory thing. Then in month 25, all of a sudden you look at your bill and it's like, wait, it was $69 last month. Why is it $129 this month? We don't do that either. We do exactly what it's going to be. There are no introductory rates. So it is actually affordable because, again, with the feasibility study, you have to look where that price point is. You know, $129 is probably going to price most people out of the market.
Yeah, there's definitely a sweet spot, whether you live in town or live in the country. This is kind of a technical one, but Ben asked, which is best, fiber on the poles, I guess, so power poles, or fiber in the ground?
Fiber on the poles is the way most of my co-ops are now putting their infrastructure and their facilities out there. It's much less expensive. You can go out there and you can hang it without trenching, digging, going, all that. It's so much cheaper to put it out there. It's one of the ways that the feasibility studies. Now, it's a little bit more vulnerable when you have weather issues, just like overhead lines are compared to underground lines when you have weather issues. So in Mobile, the Gulf Coast, right down here, you're probably going to have a few outages more if it's above than if it's below ground. But on the positive side, when it's above ground, if you have a problem, you can see it and you know exactly where it is.
Right.
When it's buried and you have a problem, then you got to kind of figure out what happened.
Yeah. And, you know, you could just follow the power crews around, right? If it was down and, you know, they're working on that pole, that's probably where your problem is.
Exactly. The thing is, if you build the system the right way, you know, they're going to put slack in that fiber so that if the pole does come down, it doesn't break. The reason why that we were able to hang it aerial instead of underground now is the technology for splicing has come leaps and bounds in the last 5 years. It used to be if you broke this fiber and to splice it in, it could take weeks. Now it's hours.
Oh, wow.
And a note to all of your listeners out there, if you're any good with your hands, that might be a job that you look into, because with all of the fiber going everywhere, there's going to be a high demand for these people, which is a brand new industry.
So I mentioned that last week. I mentioned that last week on the show. You're somebody who does this for a job. So that is true that those jobs are going to be, those are the jobs of right now, let alone the future.
Well, absolutely. And it's changing. And, you know, the thing is, there's lots of power linemen out there and they make great money.
Mm-hmm.
If my son was going to go and had a desire to, or my daughter had a desire to go into utility work, I would push them towards fiber because there's not as much opportunity to get hurt.
Good point.
There's a lot of money in it, too.
Good point. Don says we're investing this money in fiber optic when 5G is on our horizon. Does that play into it at all?
Not in rural areas.
No.
5G... I can't remember the exact number, but this is not an exaggeration. It's a low number that with the current cell phone towers, to have the same coverage with 5G, you have to have like 200 or 250 micro towers in that same service territory. And the one thing I would point out to everyone is there is no such thing as wireless.
Meaning what?
Every one of those antennas are connected to fiber. Yeah. I'm on my cell phone right now. I'm not connected to a wire, but it is going to the very first tower this signal can find, and it is going through a wire. It's going through a fiber network to get to whatever network you're on, and we're talking through wires. So when we talk wireless, that's a convenience of, you know, being able to hook up Wi-Fi. But if you look at your router at home, I mean, you've got the cable modem, and then it's hooked up to your Wi-Fi. There's still a fiber network there.
And this fiber network, and something if people just didn't catch the beginning of our conversation, one of the questions, I mean, your partners, people you work with, they can have these capillaries, right, of connectivity with fiber in the rural areas. But to understand, there is going to be this challenge of that, did you call it the middle mile?
Yes.
Of connection. Where is that going to, I mean, is it going to just cut off through the woods like a power line, or is it going to run down current roads? And like, where does that run?
Well, it's going to depend on the company that does it. More than likely, you're going to see it involved with the power right away because the facilities are there. And that company would probably rent space from the power companies where there's a right-of-way in the utilities, where the facilities are there. Right now, there's tons of fiber. If you're lucky enough, like your most of your listeners are, to live in the I-65, 59, and 10 corridors, there's a ton of fiber that follows the interstates. But it's kind of like that whole economic development debate that we get into. You know, transport. It used to be transportation, transportation, transportation. If you had an off ramp, you were guaranteed to be profitable on that interstate.
Right.
Same holds true with fiber. You know, that fiber followed all of those economic development corridors. So we have very little of it as far as a interstate system for broadband out in the rural areas. We've got to solve that problem if we ever want connectivity in places like the Black Belt.
Yeah. Absolutely, because, I mean, you talk about an area that does, you know, I mean, I guess 65 skirts the eastern boundary of the Black Belt, but, I mean, from there over to the Mississippi state line, that is very 82 maybe. I mean, there's not a lot of big roads.
No, and, I mean, in this day and age, it used to be if you, you know, had a good road, four-lane road to get, and you were 50 miles away from the interstate and it was four lanes to get you there, you had a decent opportunity of land and an economic development project here and there. If you're old enough like me to remember, if you had access to water and sewer, it was really going to make the difference in whether or not you could get a economic development project. Well, now it's fiber. You know, we take for granted the power, the water, the sewer issues for economic development. Those are a given. Now it's, do you have access to fiber? Do you have access to high speed internet? Because that's how the entire world communicates in the business world.
True. Sean, get a lot of questions about specific scenarios. And you and I talked during the break. You were telling me about a website where if these people I can go to get more information or to find out more about if they're one of these places that's in a, like Baldwin County, a lot of these coming in from Baldwin County, where would they go?
The best place to go is ADECA's website, and that's the Alabama Department of Economic and Community Affairs. They're the ones that are they have a broadband department. They're the ones that facilitate the grants. They're trying to do some mapping to figure out where the truly unserved and underserved areas are in the state of Alabama. Go to their website, Google. If you have access, it's funny, we take it for granted. These people are trying to figure out how to get internet, and we're telling them to go to the internet.
Get on their phone, yeah.
But if they go to ADECA's website and look for the broadband department, there are contacts there. And they need to make their voice heard about, you know, where they don't have access to high-speed internet. My biggest pet peeve is when a lot of these companies advertise, and especially, you know, 25-3. 25 megs up, 3 megs down. And if you look at the fine print, it says up to.
Up to,
you're buying, hopefully, at some point in time, they are guaranteeing that you will, at the best, get 25-3.
Tuesday night at 1 in the morning. Tuesday night at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Exactly. You know, but most times you're going to be somewhere around 12. But every once in a while, if you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you can download those pictures.
But that the danger of that is if that shows up as, okay, well, they're served, right? I mean, so if people don't make their voice heard, they may be, instead of sitting back and saying, well, of course they know our situation, maybe they don't.
Exactly, because I'll take it one step further in the way how screwed up the maps are. We use the FCC maps, the Federal Communication Commission. Thankfully, Senator Schofield has told ADECA we need real maps. Because we started looking at these FCC maps, and they're broken down into census blocks. And what they do is if there is one person in that census block that has access to 25-3, and that's up to 25-3, they color that entire census block in as served, and now that census block is now ineligible for any type of aid, support, incentive, grant, subsidy. It's all gone because, quote-unquote, it's served.
So you could be somebody in there that has nothing, and because that one household in that census block has it, they move on. They're passing over.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've got a good friend who lives in Hope Hole, Alabama, and she was telling me about her frustration. They've got old dial-up, barely 10-1 speeds because the old DSL lines and switches are capped. You can only put so many people there if you want even remotely close to 25.3. And she's waiting for one of her neighbors to die so that she can get their port. And, I mean, it's terrible for me to say that, but it's kind of the way it works. But because the ports are capped, she can't get into that. That entire service area is still considered served, even though her and her neighbors that weren't lucky enough to get in there early enough will never have service.
Wow, what a story. All right, so it's incumbent upon folks to make sure that they're noticed in this. So going to ADECA's website, probably the first step here, right?
It is the first step. Make, you know, and talk to your legislators, talk to your city, you know, talk to the folks that represent you, because there is a lot of money coming down. But if they don't hear from the people that don't have access to it, one, it's either going to get spent improperly, or two, they're going to think that that's fine. These folks are okay. And, you know, I represent the rural areas, but we've got some real problems in inner city Mobile and other places.
Sure. And you've got rural areas close to, you know, I mean, North Baldwin, right? North Baldwin, while it's very close to Alabama's biggest growing county, right? Baldwin County, I mean, it's part of it, but it's not, you get north there, it's not the same thing.
North of I-10, it doesn't look very familiar to the folks south of I-10 in Baldwin County, does it?
No.
And I've got one of my biggest co-ops that serves Baldwin County, but again, you look at the feasibility study, and the problem that you have is a lot of incumbent providers that are there now have cherry-picked South Baldwin County, so it's virtually impossible to make any feasible company work in North Baldwin County without having at least some moderately dense areas to be able to offset the cost, or you're going to have a huge subsidy program just for North Baldwin County.
Wow. A lot of challenges here, and but hopefully people learned something here today. I know I did, and we'll get you to come back on soon and kind of help us navigate this through the summer and, you know, before the next legislative session. It'll be interesting how this conversation will move.
Well, and, you know, here's the big thing. We need to do it sooner rather than later, because there is a cap time as to when we can use this money. So, you know, if we don't do it now, we probably never will.
Yeah. I agree with that. It seems like a true sea change moment, you know, with the amount of money out there, that if we're going to tackle this, this is one of those times we could do it. Sean, as always, I appreciate you being on with us, and come back and talk to us again soon.
Anytime you want me, Sean. Thank you.
All right. Sean Strickler, VP of Public Affairs for the Alabama Rural Electrification Association, right here on Midday Mobile, and we're coming right back.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, let's get this rolling right now. Your chance to win tickets to go see REO Speedwagon. They're coming here, Mobile Civic Center Theater, July 19th. Do this. Let's do caller number, let's make it easy. Caller number 3 at 343-0106. 343-0106. Win a pair of tickets to see REO Speedwagon July 19th at the Mobile Civic Center Theater. Get another chance coming up tomorrow morning. But I think Dalton's going to require y'all to use the app to win tomorrow, which is still really cool. Maybe I'll do that tomorrow as well. I'll copy Dan and Dalton. Right now, telephone 343-0106. Caller number 3. You got your tickets for REO Speedwagon Monday, July 19th at the Mobile Civic Center Theater. So good luck in that. All right. And as we wrap it up here, so David asked me a question. David, you obviously read my mind. It is a tough one, David. He said, whenever you hear about a sewage spill in the area, that's one of your biggest WTF moments on the radio. Because he knows that, yeah, this is the soapbox I've been on forever. Let's keep the out of the water, right? I think that's a very positive, bipartisan, all-partisan, both-county thing to do. He said, since this money y'all were just talking about is for broadband and sewer infrastructure upgrades, which is more important to you, rural broadband or sewage upgrades? I don't know. It's leaving me with an ulcer, David. Bob says, I need fiber run to Boatyard Lake. which, of course, Tensaw area. I don't know where that is on the list, Bob. He said, I need to be able to do my work on a computer from my shooting houses. Yeah, Bob, I'm gonna redline you out because you already win because that area around Boatyard Lake is so gorgeous there along the Alabama River. You're already winning with where you are. So get your own satellite device there. Okay, more questions about specific situations. Best thing to do, check out the ADECA website, and you'll be able to get all the information, at least that they have, and we'll continue this conversation. All right, Don and Wilmer, picking up the REO Speedwagon tickets. Good for you. Another chance coming up tomorrow morning with Dan and Dalton. So happy to have Dan back in the fold here at FM Talk 106.5. Paul Feinbaum, he joins us next.